were on your hunt for the PS4 today. So where'd you go? You went to Walmart, or where'd you go and try and find this PS5? Actually, excuse me.
Yeah. So today it was the digital only one at Walmart, and then Sony's got something around 2 o'clock Pacific today that I'm currently in the queue for.
So is it a daily hunt for this PS5?
You know, there are people who track it with magical internet bots and things like that. And then I follow those people. So I think I'm like a level 2 nerd when it comes to trying to get one of these, not the whole level 1 with the assistive technology. But it's been unreal and a pain. And I've got two friends now who were able to score one. And one had to like buy a bundle with a bunch of other garbage in it to even get one. You know, it's really weird. And when you watch all like, you know, GameStop rising and massive stock gains, and just makes me wonder, like, you know, how much of that is going into getting more PlayStations into hands?
Right. What's really going on here, honestly?
Yeah. Another lie for your guys' book of lies, I think.
Yeah, did you see that GameStop documentary on Hulu?
Not yet, but I have been following the meme stocks and by extension cryptocurrency the last couple of months, and it's been interesting to watch how if you have enough people, you can manipulate prices in the stock market and in the crypto market, I guess, pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. It's like the power of persuasion.
It's ridiculous. It's really ridiculous. I'm glad I don't follow that, and I can't give. I just don't. I don't understand stocks. I don't understand cryptocurrency. So I guess I've lucked out that way.
In this case, ignorance really is bliss, because it would just infuriate you to no end. Eventually, there'll be a movie like The Big Short that'll explain it to people, where it won't be, you know, too terribly technical and jargony, but it'll be a long while before that happens.
We love The Big Short, right, Brandy?
Yeah, I like that movie.
So we obviously have a guest today, and welcome to the podcast, by the way, everybody that's listening. But we do have a guest today, and I'm going to let our guests introduce themselves. Guest?
My name is Joseph Dobzinski Jr. I am the host, producer, engineer, and creator, I guess, of One Movie Punch, your daily movie podcast for reviews, except until the pandemic hit last year, and then it went by the wayside.
So how did that happen? I used to, honestly, I got my daily dose of One Movie Punch. I was listening to movies in 10 minutes. I was living for it every day on my commute. I was like, yes, I'm so educated. I've just listened to all these different movies. So what happened once the pandemic hit? How did things change for you?
You know, it kind of put a lot of things into perspective. The pandemic is the third in a series of, you know, natural disasters / social emergencies, I guess, that we've had to deal with since we've been in California. We're up in Ventura County. And so in the past, like, 6-7 years, we've had to evacuate twice because of fires. And then we're just getting to the end of this pandemic after however many days. And there were kind of three things that kind of drove the decision. One was that I was feeling as stressed as it was just trying to manage keeping the podcast going, because it took an incredible amount of work. It was around 30 hours a week.
Wow.
Just to do all the research and get the websites updated and reach out to people on social media. As you two well know, podcasting is a lot of work if you're trying to do it.
Yeah, and that's how we met you. I found you on Twitter. And I, you know, in the movie realm, all the podcasts talk about movies. And then I happened upon your Twitter page. And then I was interested. And I went to your website. You were asking for collaborators. And I just loved how organized you were. And you were like, hey, this is what I want. These are the rules. This is how you get it to me. Make it happen. And we connected that way.
Yeah. You guys have been loyal contributors and promo submitters, and it's It's part of actually what I miss a lot about the podcasting was the community that kind of builds up around it. What I ended up finding out, though, is that while you might have a dedicated community around you of great people, 25, you know, 30 people always tuning in and downloading, it's hard to balance that against the amount of work that goes into putting together a daily podcast. I tried to make it work first by bringing on more collaborators. And so, as you saw, after a while, there was a whole team that were contributing on a regular basis outside of the guest reviews that you would do and others would do for special things.
Yeah.
You know, even those regular contributors started to kind of dry up, if you will, after a while. They have their own lives going on, and it's fun until it's not, as you all know right. well from podcasting. Yeah. So
definitely.
Yeah.
So we reached a point, I reached a point then when this pandemic hit that I needed to take a break from it. And with all the stress and everything else that was going on, and then suddenly being stuck at home with, not stuck at home, we actually made the best of it, but being stuck at home with one movie spouse and one movie spawn for as long as we were, it just became infeasible to try and record a daily podcast and get it all done while not stepping on my wife, who is a teacher trying to do distance learning on the fly during the pandemic, and that's my daughter rough. Who's trying to do distance learning on the fly as well. So it just became too much, and the stress of dealing with, you know, people who didn't believe it was a real pandemic and people who were, you know, kind of turning it into a political instead of a kind of a medical scientific thing it should have been. And I had to take a step back, and that's where it's kind of been since around last March. I reached out to folks a little bit. There are about two people who can maybe come back and do it regularly, but without having the additional people in there making it happen, I just don't see a regular daily podcast coming back, you know, but I might surprise myself.
always surprise yourself. That's exciting. So if you can't do a daily podcast, which I was like, wow, this guy's amazing. He's putting out a podcast every day. Would you consider like a weekly or bi-monthly podcast, or do you have thoughts about that?
Well, like I said, if I could find seven dedicated reviewers to turn in weekly reviews, I would be able to start it up no problem. You know, the bulk of the time for all of that is, as you all know, guesting a few times, and it's watching the movie. That can take up to 2 hours, and then it takes about a good hour to, you know, turn some notes into something that resembles a review, and then recording it and getting it to sound right. The way it worked for the reviewers is that, you know, they would submit a written and a audio review that was already mostly cleaned up or at least close enough where I could chop it up and turn it into something on my end. And mm-hmm. that radically reduces 30 hours a week down to like 5 or 6. If other people are doing the bulk of the work, it's just, what I found is that, you know, the folks would be on for a while. And then aside from like Andrew Campbell, who's been there from the beginning, and a few other folks, it was never consistent. And so it couldn't be there. We looked at trying to reduce it somehow to be maybe, you know, a weekly or maybe 5 days a week or something like that. But the math never seemed to add up after trying to figure out how much I'd have to put into it.
Mm-hmm.
What I think I'm going to use it for going forward is kind of for like special sequences or events or things like that. Similar to what we did for Reign of Terror back in 2020. It. Yeah. So for those who didn't tune in to Book of Lies on guesting on One Movie Punch, it was a 31-day Halloween horror film review fest, but there was an audio drama beforehand where we brought in one of our reviewers, Shane Hyde, from Australia, and he was like a narrator for an old audio drama, old-timey radio play of all these horror films being mashed up together. And it was kind of a nice layer to add on to the usual reviews that were taking place, and the script was bonkers and bananas, but it all kind of made sense at the end. If you go back to October 1st, 2020,
on Movie Punch. Was it 2020 or was it 2019?
Are you right?
It was 2019.
The pandemic's got my years all messed up.
What day is it?
Yeah. 2019, October 1st, 2019. And then it's 31 days of just general, mostly PG-13 level fun.
It was a good time. There's so many collaborators, so many different podcasts come in and, you know, offer up scripts and reviews, and then Shane Hyde with his voice. You know, it was a lot of fun following it. And I was just like super excited that you asked us to be a part of it, and, you know, we're in it too. And it was really fun. I listened every day, of course, because I'm a fan, and I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
So what I'm hoping for is to maybe bring it back like for a month at a time, so I can take the few months beforehand to really kind of ease into getting all 30 episodes ready and all the collaborators kind of put together, and plenty of time for anybody who wants to participate, and then maybe chunk it out like that. So like three times a year for a month, it'll be there. And again, assuming there's enough participation and enough folks there, ideally it'd be like, What I've wanted to do for a long time is have February be all black filmmakers for Black History Month, and then have like June be all LGBTQ filmmakers for a month, and then have October be nothing but horror movies. Those seem to be the three areas where I think as a platform for One Movie Punch, it can, you know, be educational as well as, you know, providing people insight and access to films that maybe they're not going to see. Everyone can do Marvel, but to really kind of dig into what's going on in any of those areas is kind of a lot more fun, and kind of something I'm into anyway. It's and that way maybe it wouldn't feel like so much work, I guess.
I feel you. I and those months and those themes, they're necessary, they're important, and I think if you wanted to, I feel like with your following that you already have, and you get back in there and look for collaborators, I think people would love to be involved, at least in the beginning. Then you really have to put real effort in. Not, it takes effort, but you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Yeah, and, you know, having it be spaced out like that, I kind of get a break, and that was the thing I never got with One Movie Punch, was a break, really. In fact, the only break I got from the podcast and while it was on was when we had to evacuate for the fire the second time. And so, like, that wasn't really much of a break.
Oh, my. Which fire did you get caught up in?
All right. So the one before the podcast started was the Springs fire. And that one came down, came close, but never close enough. The last one was a little scarier, and it came down. They evacuated our neighborhood out by the university, and we could see the fire like burning down the hillside.
Oh, man.
On that one. So like we had to leave, and then we were staying with friends in Camarillo, and, you know, it was just 2-3 days of waiting to be allowed to go back, and hopefully the stuff was there. And it was, but it wasn't relaxing. It wasn't a break for sure.
Wow.
Oh yeah. I got a break cause I was evacuated by a fire. It's such a vacation.
Yeah. We did build in some breaks afterwards, but it ended up being catch up time for me on the back end. You know, we took a couple weeks off every now and again before, but it all I did during that time was finish up all the stuff I couldn't finish before the break started, and got everything ready to go for when the break was over. So I'm hoping maybe if I can bring it back maybe early next year, trying it out for February. That'll give me enough time to get used to being in a world that isn't trapped at home again, and maybe try to get a few other things done before I go back to it. There's another project I've been working on. If you all want to hear about that.
I do.
When I left my job back in, I think it was 2017, I was kind of overstressed and a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. And we were fortunate enough that we could survive on my wife's paycheck and some of the money we had saved up. And so what I wanted to do was go back to doing a lot of writing. And I did, I guess, do that with One Movie Punch. It was just writing a lot of movie reviews, and it wasn't really what I was looking to do. So instead, after I left my job and took about a month off, I went and finished a novel, and then I put it on a shelf, and then I got caught up with One Movie Punch for 2.5 years, where it just sat there. I also started, during one of the fire evacuations, another novel, and I actually finished that during this pandemic, that second one.
What's it about?
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's about a series of well, it starts with a old-timey lieutenant on a old-time detective on a police force in the middle of nowhere getting a VHS tape, which is given to him because he's the only one who actually knows what it is and how to use it. And all of that. And when he gets the materials he needs and he puts it in, it's a tape about somebody who's gone to a resort where there's a bunch of wealthy people bidding on a technology that can change the world. And as he's in there watching the tape as it's going on, he's like stopping and trying to bring up, you know, information on the internet. And he's not having a good, easy time doing it because he's old school. But what he ends up finding out is that the guy is there, and it's from the same place that had recently been consumed in a wildfire. So you can see where the inspiration came from, being out on a fire evacuation. So everybody thought that the people at this resort died in the fire, even though it was supposed to be there. And it turns out this guy was on the inside. And so he has video from secret cameras that he had in there. And so he starts following what this guy put on this VHS tape. And it turns out it wasn't a wildfire that did it. There was some stuff that happened on the inside that you could see on this video. And that just starts a whole realm of weird kind of both digital and in-person kind of vigilante things that start happening across the country in every city. He's just trying to deal with what's happening in his city during the time.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like I feel like it's not a murder mystery, but it's kind of like a mystery. Like, I don't know how to, it's not a period piece. I don't know, but it's a whodunit or who did it, I guess. No?
I think it ends up being like that. I like to write kind of observer fiction, like kind of stories from the point of view on people on the sidelines. In this one, you know, the cop isn't really directly involved with the situation. He's just trying to monitor the information that's coming in on these VHS tapes and kind of give it to the people who are actually trying to run down leads in various cities where other actions like this are taking place. It's a very, I guess I don't know how to describe it because I'm trying to write something different, and it probably end up being the same as something else out there.
But, it's experimental fiction.
Yeah. So that ended up actually being kind of a later book from the original book I finished. So I've been actually working on finishing the first book I wrote before that, these past like 3-4 months now at home. And that one's just about done. And I actually am looking for an agent to shop it around.
Nice.
Because that one's about a guy, and it's kind of set in the same literary universe, although this is a way smaller scope of a story in it. It's about a guy who is leaving his job to stop at a bar and pick up some weed from his friend, and then just enjoy his weekend, and gets caught up in a series of weird drug raids and a chase across town.
No.
Yeah. It's not like Pineapple Express. It's not really a comedy because it gets pretty dark, but it is kind of a comment on kind of the changing nature of cannabis and culture, and about police brutality and what police can and can't do in the name of the war on drugs that we don't, well, most people I think don't really understand. And a lot of people, when they do understand it, they really understand it because it's a little scary what police can and can't do.
And it's all about, yeah, but it's about knowing your rights too. A lot of people don't know what they should or should not say, or what they, you know, what you just described, this book, I feel like it's important. I'm excited about that one too. So get it out there. I'll buy it. But a lot of people don't know their rights, and they should.
Yeah. And you know, it's a crapshoot too, even if you know your rights, whether they'll
true.
I've been in a number of cases, you know, and I'm some white dude, and I've had problems with, police, where I'm just like, hey, I think my rights say that, you know, and they're like, yeah, shut up. Let's start looking at your car. You know, it's like, all right.
F your rights.
Seriously.
Oh, you thought you had rights? Get out of here. Have a seat.
Exactly. So, so that one's just about done with the final edit on it, as opposed to just kind of a rough draft, which is the other one I was describing. And this one I want to give to an agent, because I've learned that there are no publishers anymore that'll take a blind submission from anybody. In fact, that they'll just return it to you because they don't want to ever be accused of stealing an idea from you.
Yeah.
If you send them something. So I need to get an agent. They need to shop it around. And if nobody wants to pick it up, I'm actually going to transform it probably by the end of the year into an audio drama podcast. Which would be a nice way to kind of do it, and then set up a Patreon. And if people want to, you know, help support that effort, if it doesn't get picked up by a publishing house, then every month I can send them kind of not the audio drama transcript, which will be available, but kind of a chapter from the book. Then that way, as they're subscribed, they can keep reading the whole story as opposed to getting the audio drama version of it.
I like that.
Yeah, it's actually what Dickens did with the Pickwick Papers way, way back in, I would say, jolly old England. but that's how he sold the Pickwick Papers. They were all sold as like a chapter at a time. And at the end of the first one, to get people to buy the next one, the protagonist in that story is hanging from a cliff, and that's where the term cliffhanger comes from. It's from this term in the Pickwick Papers. It's
nice. Look at Joseph, you're dropping so much knowledge on me right now. Oh my gosh. I had no idea that's where that term like cliffhanger came from.
Yeah, it's a little, you know, useless trivia unless you're on Jeopardy, I guess.
And it's not useless. Everyone that just heard that is so much smarter now.
Well, then I found a use for my useless knowledge. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
So I'm working on finishing that one up hopefully by the end of the month. That was my goal, and I seem to be zeroing in on that if I can stop being distracted by the PlayStation restock. And
oh, good old PlayStation. So when I first reached out to you, you said you're thinking of moving to San Diego?
Yeah. So that's the other part of it. After two fire evacuations and a pandemic now, there's only 1 year left that One Movie Spawn will be around, and then she's off to college somewhere, I'm sure. Amy and I, One Movie Spouse, are trying to figure out, you know, what our next steps are in life. And one of the promises I made myself when I decided to take the job as a IT consultant and then became a programmer analyst, 100% for the money, was that I would eventually go back and pursue what I really wanted to do, which was a degree in philosophy, a PhD in philosophy. And so in order to get to that, I have to get a master's first. And so because I've got friends and kind of an activist network down in San Diego that I'm semi-plugged into, we're going to probably move down to San Diego in the next couple of years so I can get an MA, a master's in philosophy, specifically with a thesis and something to do with kind of leftist or maybe communist studies, focused on trying to help people organize and help themselves together. And there's a lot of great networks and communities down in San Diego to kind of study the practical side of that, along with the book learning that has to go with getting your master's degree as well.
All that book learning.
Yeah. So I have this weird dream of being the first person that actually does a practical thesis in philosophy in like decades. It could happen, but
it could.
To that end, I've been doing a personal study of, here's some really nerdy stuff, of a Russian philosopher named Peter Kropotkin, who's kind of one of the big names in anarcho-communism. And if that sounds like a bunch of, you know, political gobbledygook, it mostly is. But it is kind of interesting because his big thing is that we need to kind of have communities that are working for each other. If the term communism is scary for people, then it's just kind of communities helping communities. And
I hear communism. No, honestly, thanks for saying that. I hear communism and I know nothing about communism, but I feel like it's bad. But I don't know, you know, the history or what it in fact means. So when I hear communism, I'm like, okay, that's bad, right? But I don't have any like real knowledge of what exactly it is. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I know there's certain Asian countries that are communist countries, but that's all I know.
I think, you know, that comes from years of being in the United States and, you know, all the Russian, anti-Russian Cold War stuff that we all saw on every movie, every television show, every op-ed in every newspaper. I'm certainly, I like the idea of communism, but I haven't seen a good version of it yet, I guess, on the world stage. And to me, the base kind of idea of communism is that everybody contributes according to their ability and then everybody receives according to their need. And then if you want something greater than what you need, then you have to work for it yourself and somehow get it or associate with other people to make it happen. That's a very high level idea though. And then it's had all these different attempts on the kind of national level that we saw and then on the kind of more regional level. It seems to work better the smaller the group is, if I had to make any generalizations, because at least you know everybody then. It's hard to kind of give your loyalty to a giant state of a billion people, but it's easier if you know everybody in your community, you know. I mean, then it's just kind of, yeah, I'm not helping out some ungrateful jerk. I'm helping out, you know, John down the street or whatever. Mm-hmm. But that's not what we get or hear about in news. And really, we get the same thing with the term socialism as well. A lot of folks, you know, use socialism and it scares people, or it's kind of a scary idea. And for the most part, it seems to be that government provides healthcare, and if that's socialism, then pass me the hammer and sickle, because we're We've been waiting a long time just to get basic health care.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's just like, hey, I don't know anything else, or all the way that, you know, communism and socialism is painted in media and history. It's just like, hey, communism's bad, okay?
And that's actually part of why I want to actually study this area, not just to have work on kind of get communities to help communities and to be part of a community that helps itself, but to also kind of get through even my superficial understanding of what's meant by communism, anarcho-communism, communal behavior, community. You know, there's a lot of theory out there that I've just started to kind of dip a toe into, trying to understand how communities work, and especially how they work now. I certainly feel like I see more community online than I do in person.
True.
The podcasting community is one of those communities. You know, honestly, I've probably interacted with podcasters more in the past 3 years than I have with kind of people in real life. I don't know what that says about me, but just how close and how regularly in contact I've been with podcasters on a regular basis when you find them when I was doing it.
You're totally right. The podcasting community is such a tight-knit group, but they're so welcoming and inviting. And it's like, hey, you started a podcast. Well done, sis. Welcome to the club, you know. And then, like, people educate each other, like, with collaborations or with groups. You know, we're a part of so many different podcast groups, and it's such an open community. And I have made, like, a lot of friends that I've never met in the real world, but, like, we're podcasting buddies. And it is a great community to be a part of. But in regards to, like, online communities as well with the pandemic, I joined so many Facebook groups, and there are people that are local to the community here in town. I've made a lot of connections of people that I, like, live around the corner from, and I would have never met them without this Facebook group and without, you know, the pandemic. It's interesting how we are finding community in different ways. I don't know why we don't want to interact with a lot of people in person, but it's like, hey, I'll interact with you, perfect stranger, online. Oh, you happen to live by me? Let's hang out. This is how we're making friends now. It's interesting.
Yeah, there's going to be a huge surge of people wanting to be in person with other people again. Mm-hmm. When it's safe to do that, and mostly throughout California, it's getting to that point, but other places, not so much. I also found during the pandemic that, you know, a lot of people and especially it's kind of conflated with the election chaos last year as well, that I learned a lot of people I really didn't want to have in my life online based on what I was seeing. That was instructive in its own way.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of internet hate, keyboard gangsters, people just like, what? What are you even talking about? Why am I friends with you? Unfriend.
There are a lot of ignorant people, which you can kind of deal with. And then I discovered that there were some people that were just straight up, you know, racist, white supremacist, you know, Trump's the new God. And I'm like, okay, we're done. I'm just, you know,
yeah.
As much as I would like to mentally debate with you and try to bring you around, I'm past that point in my life now. I can't convince you otherwise.
No, for real. So if anyone wants to read up about you, Joseph, or I know you're going to be shopping around the books, so they probably can't get a hold of that yet. How can people check in with you and see what's going on with you and your work?
So you can follow me on Twitter. The personal account is J Dubzinski, and I'm sure that'll be linked somewhere in the podcast.
I'll link it in the show notes.
Awesome. The spelling's a bit rough, but once you find me, I'm there. I'm going to be getting back on there more often once I've got something to kind of talk about. You can also find me on Facebook. It is a buckshot worth of topics on a lot of things. If that interests you, if any of the stuff I've talked about kind of interests you, it's there, along with regular screaming about the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how great it is lately. And then I'm hoping by the end of this month, or maybe in early July, depending on how things pan out, to kind of put another episode out of One Movie Punch to kind of let everybody know what's going on and kind of point them in the same places for the time being, and to kind of put a plea out there to see if there are X number of people that would be interested in being regular contributors. And who knows, maybe, you know, we can find the army we need to get it started up again, and or it doesn't feel like I'm stuck at a laptop all day.
I hear you. They're definitely out there. So you mentioned Marvel Universe. What did you think of what is it? Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Falcon and the Winter Soldier. What did you think of that?
I thought I couldn't believe how well they addressed just about every side of kind of what it means to be a soldier for a country where you don't necessarily agree with what you're being asked to do. And they did it in a way that wasn't disrespectful, I think, but it still hit all the major points. And they especially did a great job with Isaiah Bradley and with making Anthony Mackie's character, the new Captain America, of kind of talking about what it means to be a black soldier in America, and especially given the treatment of black individuals throughout history by the military and in the military. It was really there's one episode, and I can't remember which number it is, but like I was just stunned with how well they articulated it all the way through. And without it being kind of hokey or, you know, over the top, and that's just my perspective on it. But like I was surprised they went for it, because Marvel usually stays pretty safe when it comes to social commentary, and they went all in on it, and I thought that was wonderful.
I agree. I agree with you 100% on that. It wasn't too preachy. It wasn't over the top. I liked Isaiah. That was the older gentleman who like faked his death, right? The black man.
Yes.
How he was just like, hey, dude, you're black and you're trying to be Captain America, settle down. And he was just like, it's not about that, bro. You know, I love my country pretty much, and this is what I need to do. I think they addressed it very well. And like you said, they kind of touched every part of it. And it was wonderful. Like, I loved it. What was it, like 6 episodes or 8 episodes? It was great.
It was 6 episodes. I was like, that's not fair. Why do we only get 6 episodes?
Give us more.
I guess Loki's only going to be 6 as well. But, you know, 6 50-minute episodes or 45 or whatever they ended up being about on average is... Mm-hmm. I wanted it to go on forever too, but that seems about right for kind of telling a good full story without kind of falling into the trap like the CW... Arrowverse shows have kind of fallen into, where it's just filler half the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I think they needed these series like WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier and Loki to kind of tie everything together, so when they come out with the next MCU movie, everything is kind of already addressed and they can kind of move forward in the universe. So I did want more too, even with WandaVision. I was like, okay, we're only getting this. Like, it's just this. There's no season 2. That's it. This is all you get. I really appreciated it because, like you said, for 6 episodes, 45 minutes to an hour, that's way more than
WandaVision had 8 episodes. Or no, 10. 8 or 10 episodes. Or 9.
WandaVision was great. It was a good time. And I was like, what's going on? And then to find out what was going on, it's like, oh, this is great.
Almost as fun right now is following the speculation about the Marvel Cinematic Universe shows, because everyone's looking for the hint that says the Fantastic Four is coming. Everyone's looking for the hints that the X-Men are on the way. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking for the hints about, you know, all their favorite characters showing up all the time. It really kind of creates this neat kind of a deeper attention, I guess, while watching it, because you're so focused on looking for the Easter eggs or looking for the reveals that mm-hmm. are happening in the background. And then when they do have people show up, like my favorite part of WandaVision was when Darcy showed up again out of nowhere. I mean, she was one of my favorite characters from the Thor movies. And then all mm-hmm. of a sudden, here she is driving the ice cream truck because. Uh-huh. And I'm like, okay. Yeah,
no,
Darcy's back.
I feel like Kat Dennings always has that. I feel like that's her, like, in every character. Like, I love her as well, because she's so, you know, witty and, you know, funny and whatever. But I feel like she kind of plays that same character with all of her roles a little bit, you know?
Oh, yeah. But that's what I loved about it. And she was the kind of the straight woman, if you will, in Thor. She was always the one kind of, I don't know, this is a good idea. No, it's fine, really.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Okay, so you told everybody where they could find you. So if you're interested in anything that Joseph has said, go ahead and do the things. I'm putting his links. Check out One Movie Punch, because how many episodes do you guys have?
We got somewhere in the 700s when we stopped. We were closing in, hopefully. We were going to try to go for 1,000. That's still a hopeful goal at some point, just not on a daily basis from here on out.
Okay, it could still happen. So you heard what he said. Over 700 episodes, and a majority of the episodes are like 10 minutes max, maybe?
Yep.
10-minute episodes. So get after that. We have collabed on a few of them. But they're all pure gold. So check that out. We are going to go ahead and bring Joseph on, and we're going to talk about some fraud. But you guys have to come back next week to hear that. So sorry. But yeah, come back and visit us online at bookoflicepodcast.com. You can connect with us on social at Twitter, Book of Lies Pod, or Instagram and Facebook, Book of Lies Podcast. And Joseph will be back next week, and we are going to talk about Tom Girardi and all of the drama, because I knew this was going to happen. So come back next week, and you'll hear the rest.